Hi, I'm Romesh Ranganathan, and I'm just bending your ear to tell you about my brand new BBC Tea show.
Give it up for the Ranganation!
A topical comedy chat show about all of the things that are happening from the news, the country, the internet.
This is unbelievable, right?
To help me make sense of it all, they've given me my very own focus group. The bunch of fun, opinionated and passionate people from all walks of life. And of course my mum, who apparently has to be in everything I do now.
You missed a few things.
No, I didn't.
You did!
The Ranganation, available now on BBC iPlayer until July the 22nd.
I'm Molly Wansell.
And I'm Geoffrey Wansell.
And for the last 16 years or thereabouts, we have been having lunch every Saturday, and often our conversation turns to murder.
And that's what's prompted us to launch this true crime podcast called Blood Ties.
Hello, everyone. Very nice to speak to you and be back. As I always say, and I do mean it, Molly and I are fantastically grateful for all your support and for all the times you spend listening to us. It's a tremendous thrill to do this podcast, and I enjoy it every single time.
Oh, me too. It's very nice to be here.
It is, and how's your week been?
Very busy.
Yes.
Well, has it? I just have loads to do, so like every single day my head feels like it's going to implode.
I haven't had a very busy week. I've just had a very kind of complicated week with all sorts of issues running back and forth and trying to get my head together for various things that are coming up. So it's been kind of confused week. I wouldn't call it calm. It's been, you know, kind of scratchy. That would be a good word for
scratchy.
It.
You've
scratchy.
You've got a lot on your plate.
So. Yeah, I do seem to have quite a lot. And as I was saying to you, darling, I'm obviously under some kind of stress because I've got developed eczema on my inner thigh, which is not particularly pleasant.
Poor you. Yes, stress-related skin disorders are very common.
They are, and I'm perfectly well aware of it. What I need to do is to just clear the decks a bit.
You need to do some mindfulness, Dad. That's very...
mindfulness,
yeah,
yes.
Very now.
If I even knew what it was.
A little bit of transcendental meditation.
Oh, well, I thought like Harry and Meghan.
I don't know. Do they do transcendental meditation?
Oh, they certainly do meditation.
Well, it's very good for you. It's mindfulness. It's like you just try and like clear your thoughts for 10 minutes a day. Just good for your...
My problem is I wake up very early and start thinking.
Yeah. Yeah. Hence the mindfulness.
Hence the mindfulness.
Like training your brain to kind of...
Tune out.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Well,
there are apps that we could download onto your phone that sort of guide you through the meditation.
So goodness me.
It's a lot of people do it. It's really good. Maybe you should try it.
No, well...
Don't knock it till you try
it. I'm not knocking it. On the contrary, it might be a very good idea. And after all, it would make me more sort of
certainly if
current.
You're suffering from stress.
Make me more current. I need to be a bit more current. I feel a bit like a dinosaur most of the time.
Go for a walk every day.
I go for a walk most days.
Yeah, that's very good for you.
I do walk a lot.
Yeah. I don't mean from place to place. I just mean like
in general.
Yeah. Because exercise obviously is another thing that can help.
Well, with that thought,
get going.
We'll better get on with.
This week we're doing the Northumbrian manhunt.
This is a story of one man and his obsessions. The man's name is Raoul Moat. He was born in June 1973, and he committed a series of very famous crimes between July the 3rd and July the 10th, 2010. For a moment, he became the most wanted man in England. And he deliberately targeted police officers. But perhaps I should give you a little background before we start on Moat's story. 1 month before Moat committed two murders, a man called Derek Bird, who was a taxi driver in Cumbria, went on a full-scale spree. He killed 12 people and injured another 11.
Shooting spree.
Bird started off by killing his twin brother. He was a 52-year-old taxi driver. And then, literally, a rampage around parts of Cumbria, which left 12 people dead.
Was he driving around? Or
he was driving around. Some walking. He had a thing about his fellow taxi drivers. He thought he was being picked on. And so one particular taxi driver He insisted. He shot him. He just lost it completely.
He just got a gun, got in his car.
Oh, he got several guns. Several guns, not just one.
Okay.
And he got in his taxi and drove around killing people.
Okay.
Now, at this point, this is in June 2010, Raoul Moat was in jail for assault. Assault on a family member, a child. He was given 18 weeks. He's in jail in Durham. Now, one of the things about jails is that they are riveted by television, rolling news, particularly when it applies to something as dramatic as a man literally going on the rampage in Cumbria.
Quite rare in the UK.
It's very rare. There are only, what, I can think of two others. Apart from Derek Bird's case, I can only think of two other major shooting sprees in England, and in the United Kingdom, rather. One, of course, was the Hungerford massacre, and the other one was in Dunblane in Scotland.
Oh, yeah.
In the school. Both of which we might return to at some point, but because it isn't common in this country at all.
Yeah.
In fact, it's extremely rare. But what's significant about Derek Bird is that Moat is in jail, where clearly the inmates are fascinated by the fact that there's someone shooting people.
Rampaging around Cumbria. Around.
Now, Moat is, how can one put it politely, unsettled by this. And that means I need to go back about his history. At this point, he's 37 years old. He's a big man, 17 stone, 6 foot two. Born to a very disturbed mother called Josephine. His father was a council worker who moved from Birmingham to Newcastle in the early 1970s. But the relationship with Moat's mother, Josephine, broke down quickly. She had a son from a previous marriage called Angus. And in fact, the relationship broke down while Josephine was still pregnant with Raoul. And throughout Raoul's life, she held back information about his missing father. In fact, he created a fantasy that he was the son of a Frenchman, which is absolutely not the case. Moat was brought up very close to his mother in a street in Newcastle by his grandmother. In fact, poor Josephine Moat was in and out of hospital. Mental asylums. She was bipolar. What you can say, I think, and it without much doubt, is that Moat was a perfectly ordinary boy, quiet, well-mannered, described by some schoolmates, until he was about 16 when he left school. No qualifications, I'm afraid. He got all sorts of different jobs. He was a panel beater, a tree surgeon, a bodybuilder. He took up bodybuilding at 17.
Did he take steroids?
He did take steroids and antidepressants, which might help to explain what happened to him subsequently. He was a bit of a face. The older he got, the bigger he got. He became a nightclub bouncer in Newcastle.
A classic bouncer.
The classic bouncer. He did other things as well, including tree surgery, was pretty unlikely. But it became a classic and a bit of a face known to the sort of local gangsters, of which Newcastle always had a large number. We don't just have to remember Get Carter to know that Newcastle's always had its difficult side. He had three children with three different women. But in the end, as a comparatively young man, 20-something, he met up with a girl called Samantha Stobart, and he fathered the third child, a daughter called Chanel, with her. But Moat was disturbed. Maybe it was the steroids, maybe it was the fact he took karate lessons, maybe it was the fact that he became a bodybuilder, maybe it was because of his mother's influence or lack of influence on him. And he had several brushes with the law. I mean, in 2003, He was accused of threatening council staff after his daughter fell out of a window. 2005, he was caught carrying an 8-inch serrated steel knuckle duster and a 5-foot-long samurai sword. He was a man, as we've used the phrase occasionally before, almost volcanic. He had a tremendous temper. And he was also, I think, paranoid. Finally, in 2010, he gets an 18-week sentence for assault for a family member. He's a troubled, violent, aggressive man. Now, not surprisingly, Samantha is not too keen on sustaining the relationship with Raoul Moat, and indeed informs him that it's over.
Is this while he's in prison? Before he's in prison?
While he's in prison.
Okay.
But she's so frightened of him that she tells him that her new lover is a policeman, because she thinks that that might frighten Moat off from coming back to see her and Chanel. It does rather the opposite. She's 15 years younger than he is. He's 37, she's 22. Blonde, pretty. He's, as I said, 6'3" and 17 stone. Big neck. Archetypal bouncer. So while he's in jail, not only is he told that his relationship's over, quotes, although he's convinced himself that this is real love. I think that's a little difficult to completely believe, but nevertheless he has. He sees the bird shooting on television, the bird shooting spree, and becomes convinced that he's going to do away with Samantha's new policeman boyfriend.
What a great way to get someone back.
Yes. It gets better, unfortunately, if you like the darkness in this. He even confesses to the prison that his ex-partner, Samantha, and her new boyfriend, whose name is Chris Brown.
Is he actually a policeman?
No, he's a karate instructor.
Oh, right.
And he's 29 years old. He tells the prison that he's going to hurt Samantha. The prison don't pass that information on to Northumberland Constabulary. At least there's an argument that they didn't. It's still a little hazy about what exactly happened. He's released on the 1st of July, 2010. The following day, Durham Prison contact Northumbria Police and say that Moat has been released and he has been expressing anger towards his ex-partner, Samantha. What they don't do, Northumbria Police, what they don't do is take her into protective custody. He's released on a Thursday. He has an associate called Kevin Ness, whom he's told to keep an eye on Samantha. He gets out of jail. He finds Ness and another associate, who we'll come to in a moment. And Ness provides him with a sawn-off shotgun. Okay, so now it's the late at night on Friday, and in the early hours of Saturday, the 3rd of July, Moat is to be found outside Stobart's mother's house.
Who's Stobart?
Samantha Stobart.
Oh, Samantha Stobart, right.
Outside Samantha Stobart's mother's house,
right,
where she is talking to her, quotes, policeman, actually karate instructor boyfriend, Chris Brown. Moat goes on to say later that they were slagging him off. He stood outside the window, knelt outside the window of the front room, and heard them through the open window. It's July, it's quite early, it's quite, you know, quite hot, slagging him off. And so at about 2:40 in the morning, Chris Brown decides to go home. He exits the front door. It's a terraced house. He exits the front door, whereupon Moat shoots him. Dead. Chris Brown had not had only known Samantha a week.
Oh my goodness.
He was absolutely innocent, knew nothing about Moat's violent history, knew pretty little about Samantha, except she was a very pretty, attractive girl.
Yeah.
And young. So now you have Chris Brown lying in the garden, the front garden of this house, and Moat by this time is standing up right beside the front window. He sees Samantha. Her mother picks up the phone to dial 999, and Moat shoots Samantha through the window, injuring her in the stomach and in the arm. Serious, but not fatal. He then disappears with the help of Kevin Ness, one of the associates, who's provided him with the gun. They disappear in a black Lexus. Now, Northumbria police put two and two together, finally, and Moat decides to put on his Facebook page that he's got it in for all policemen.
He's putting that on his Facebook page.
Yes, he's put it on his Facebook page.
And they know that he's, well, obviously they know he's the one that shot. So well, he's on the run now.
He's on the run. But
shooting not a police officer.
Mm. And he leaves, and he at about midnight on Saturday into Sunday morning, he phones Northumbria Police and says, I'm going to kill more coppers. About a dozen 15 minutes later, a uniformed officer called PC David Rathband, who's had one or two run-ins with Moat in the past, is sitting in his car at a junction when Moat appears beside him with a sawn-off shotgun and shoots him in the face twice, both barrels.
Terrible.
Rathband thinks he's going to die. Moat has called the police before he shoots Rathband, and then he calls them again after the attack and telling them he's going to kill any policeman that approaches him. So now you have a man who's clearly very dangerous. He's already shot the innocent Chris Brown. He's mortally wounded PC David Rathband, although he recovers. He's shot his ex-partner. And now he's on the run. One of the biggest manhunts ever launched in the United Kingdom begins. We've got a violent man who's killed, who says he's going to kill policemen, and he knows that area of Northumbria relatively well. He's camped out in it various times.
Yeah.
We're now at the end of Sunday, the 4th of July. Together with Kevin Ness and his other associate, who's a man known as Sean, they leave in the Lexus and drive north into Northern London, close to a place called Rothbury. Now, Moat knows Rothbury, having been there as a child and gone back there repeatedly. It's a quite picturesque village beside a river. But it has a couple of very interesting qualities. One is there's quite a lot of forest around it. We're talking about quite dense Northumbria. We're not talking about... It's quite a dense forested region. And Moat has provided himself with one of those igloo tents.
One of those tents. Yeah.
So now you have three men. They go to Rothbury. And Moat, in the end, dispatches the two of them, these two, and decides he's going to hole up on his own. Now, that in itself was a remarkable thing to do, because he's effectively saying that he knows how to survive and that he's going to kill anyone who comes within range of him. PC Rathband is taken to hospital in a critical condition with awful injuries to his face and to his upper body. And he calls the police about, as I said, about 50 minutes after shooting Rathband, saying, you're not taking me seriously. I phoned you and told you I was going to do it. Now you start taking me seriously. Well, shortly after 2 p.m. on the Sunday, the police hold a press conference. They addressed Moat directly, saying they were certainly taking him seriously, and that, and it also told him that Brown had no connection whatever to the police force, and they urged him to hand himself in for the sake of his three children. Moat has clearly, I suppose the commonplace word would be, he's clearly lost it. He's become literally obsessed.
He's on the rampage.
He is, and he's hiding in a forest outside Rothbury. In a tent.
I mean, you have to know that that's not going to end. Like, once you've got to that point, you know, there's no real... You can't go back, can you? There's no way of fixing it, as it were.
No, you can't fix it. And I think it's hung for a sheep as a lamb, you know. It's the old thing, once you've killed.
Yeah.
By the 6th of July, which is the Tuesday morning of this week, the car has been spotted near Rothbury, the Black Lexus. Yeah. And two men are seen walking in to the town, the village. They are Carl Ness from North Tyneside and Quorum Sean Awan, who drove Moat on the night he shot and blinded PC David Rathbun.
Happy with the way the world is heading? Don't buy this book. Understand why you do what you do? Don't buy this book. At peace with your existence? Don't buy this book. Content with your relationships? Don't buy this book. The follow-up to The Subtle Art of Not Giving a F*** by Mark Manson is finally here. Everything is a book about hope, out now.
Terrible.
These two are seen walking out of Rothbury and arrested. They claim they were held hostage by Moat. Absolutely not the case.
Obviously untrue.
Yes, and they are, quite rightly, eventually charged and indeed convicted. In fact, Ness is convicted of the murder of Chris Brown, despite not actually pulling the trigger. It's a joint endeavour.
What, because of providing...
Yeah, Ness is outside the house with Moat as well.
Yeah, okay, and drives him away.
And Awan is convicted because he was the driver at the time when he shot David Rathbun. Yeah. Ness was given a life sentence with a minimum of 40 years, and Awan was given a life sentence with a minimum of 20. Their cover story was that they were being held hostage, which of course in the end is proved to be
untrue.
But nevertheless, this leaves Raoul Moat, by now armed still with the shotgun, the sawn-off shotgun, lots of ammunition, and he's hiding somewhere.
In the forest.
In the forest.
And he has a car.
He's dumped the car now.
Okay.
That's it. He's on foot.
Okay.
After a while, naturally, lots of people are fascinated. It's a small village in Northumbria.
Yeah, it's very unusual.
It's very unusual. Yeah. It becomes a manhunt of the most extraordinary proportion. I think there were 160 officers, armed, 160 armed officers. That represented effectively 1 in 10 of every armed officer in the country.
Wow.
There were armed response vehicles, 20 armoured cars, shipped across by ferry from Northern Ireland, snipers.
For one man.
Dogs and helicopter and, believe it or not, an RAF Tornado jet equipped with heat-seeking radar.
Oh my goodness.
To find
one man in a forest.
You can't
make it up. It's extraordinary.
It was an absolutely extraordinary.
I mean, I do remember it, but not as well as that. What year was it?
2010. 2010.
Too busy working.
Probably. Probably were, darling.
I remember it, but not. It definitely wasn't like watching. And I suppose it's a bit like in America when you have a car chase, you know, and they film it and everyone.
OJ.
Yeah.
The famous OJ catch.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Well.
Nowadays, it would be even more with like social media. And yes. Would be. Yeah.
Well, again, Moat has clearly got the obsession through and through, and he writes while he's in the tent a 49-page letter. Explaining it. And it says they were going to pay for what they've done. This is the police.
Who didn't do anything.
And he also says in the letter, the public need not fear me, but the police should, as I won't stop till I'm dead.
Good.
The letter is given to a friend. The friend...
So he's still, like...
He's around.
In contact with people he knows.
Yes. The police relayed a message to Moat from his ex-partner, Samantha, Sam, that, he should not do any, hand himself in for fear of doing any more damage.
Yeah.
If you love your daughter, that sort of letter. The confusion about the hijacker, the two hostages, takes a little while to unravel, but then finally it does unravel. And on the 6th of July, the Black Lexus is discovered near Rothbury. A 2-mile ground exclusion zone is set up. A 5-mile, 5,000-foot air exclusion zone is set up. And it's later, clearly, the two men are then arrested, not as hostages, but as accomplices.
Okay.
By this time, police from 6 forces have been called in, including the Met, who sent a specialist.
I was going to say they must have, they did ship in all the people.
Yeah, I mean, armed officers were deployed to schools, outside every school in the area.
To protect
the school children, for fear of hostages. I mean, this was a manhunt of the most extraordinary intensity. There were, within the tent, thought to have been used by Moat. This came, they're not sure, but certainly it looks as though it was the tent he was using. They find it, and they find an 8-page letter to Samantha from Moat.
Oh, so they found his tent with stuff in it, but not him.
Not him. Okay. There was also a 4-hour dictaphone rambling message.
Oh, my goodness.
Okay. Now, Moat knows something about Rothbury, that the police, for one reason or another, didn't connect. He's a big man, but he also knows that there's a storm drain running under the town. Main Street.
Oh my goodness.
He was clever enough to lift a metal
manhole cover.
Yeah. Lower himself into the storm drain and hide in it. So he leaves the tent. He goes to the storm drain, a culvert.
Yeah.
Just to add a little piquancy to the story, on the 5th of July, before they turn up at Rothbury, Ness and Awan and Moat, they rob a fish and chip shop in Seton de Laval.
Food?
I think it was partly for food and partly for the small amount of takings. I can't imagine it was
a pointless thing to do.
I would have thought, absolutely. Nevertheless, and I always remember this because it's my birthday, on Friday the 9th of July 2010, when I was a princely 65-year-old. Moat is finally spotted. Couple of sightings in the main street. People say, I think that could be, and he disappears again.
What's he doing going down into the drain?
Yeah. So then, at about 6:45 on the evening of Friday the 9th of July, perhaps for one reason or another, he was bored, or he thought, let's put an end to this. He's seen on the banks of the river Coquette, which is not far from the entrance to the drain, with his sawn-off shotgun.
Shotgun.
Immediately, the area is surrounded. I mean, you couldn't put
more... it must have been like, yeah.
It was absolutely...
It was a military operation.
Surrounded. Utterly surrounded. A police negotiator is drafted in. Moat is holding the shotgun to his head. All sorts of tricks are tried. I mean, it becomes now a pantomime almost. His best friend, Tony Laidler, was escorted to the scene by authorities in an attempt to persuade him to give himself up. Another marvellous moment of pantomime was the footballer Paul Gascoigne turns up in Rothbury with a chicken nuggets. And
what,
says,
to like tempt him, yes, tempt him
I'm his best friend, he insists to the police. Quite rightly, the police don't believe him and don't let him anywhere near Moat.
Paul Gascoigne turns up with chicken nuggets.
Well, chicken nuggets and lager.
That's very odd.
Yes.
I mean, he's an odd man.
Well, really, I think he suffers from all kinds of difficulties.
Yeah.
This standoff lasts from approximately 7 o'clock in the evening of Friday the 9th of July.
Yeah.
Into the early hours of Saturday the 10th. The police have been trying to a sort of pincer movement to get either side of Moat, who by now is on his knees with the gun to his head. And one reason or another, it's decided by the Gold Commander on the spot, or it seems to have been decided, that they should fire a new taser at him in an effort to stop him killing himself and save his life. The trouble is that the taser hasn't been officially approved and they've only got an experimental version. The taser's fired twice, but has no effect on Moat. Moat is already on the brink of death and immediately shoots himself in the head at 1:15 on the Saturday morning. That wasn't what the police intended. I've no doubt that they were
trying
their very best,
yeah,
to bring him down and keep him alive. But unfortunately, they failed. Ambulance takes Moat to hospital and he's declared dead at 2:20 on that Saturday morning. It's a tragedy. A, the misinformation. B, the fact is, has it in for police officers. But it's a tragedy which is compounded by the fact that everybody touched by Moat in this manhunt was to suffer. The man who was a former police officer who was responsible for the experimental tasers took his own life as a result. Of what saw as a failure. And poor PC David Rathbun hanged himself 20 months after being blinded.
Yeah, I remember.
By a Moat. He'd founded a charity called the Blue Lamp to help victims of officers hurt while on duty. No one who came into contact with Moat escaped without scars. The acting chief constable of Northumbria, a woman, retired in 2015 and still talks about it as the worst day of her 30 years in the police. No one could call it anyone's fault.
There's something just very unsuccessful about the whole thing.
Yes, and it...
You deploy that many people to bring down one man who's just, you know...
Yeah, I mean, it turns out so wrong. I mean, unfortunately, and I do mean this when I say this, unfortunately, for some people, Moat became rather a heroic figure. There was a series of Facebook pages praising him. When his funeral took place, a woman from Hampshire took her three teenage boys to the funeral because she said, I really admired him. Now, that's absolutely ridiculous.
Well, that's just mad people.
You know, there was a Raoul memorial page on Facebook. Even the then Prime Minister, David Cameron, condemned it and said he doesn't deserve any kind of sympathy.
Not.
At all. He was a callous killer.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what he was, a callous killer. But he attracted this extraordinary kind...
Because of the standoff, do you think? I think... people sort of got into the story.
I think it's partly that. But how you can have any sympathy whatever for a man who callously shot a totally innocent man, Chris Brown, and David Rathband, and his ex-partner, and threatened to kill anybody else who came within his... got in his way... I mean, he exercised considerable influence because at one point he communicated with the police that if any further inaccuracies were printed in the papers about his private life, I can't imagine there were very many inaccuracies about the life of a bouncer, panel beater and sometime tree surgeon, but never mind. He said, any further inaccuracies, I will start killing civilians. The police were genuinely... concerned
that in a really tight, difficult spot.
Very, very difficult situation, and there was no sense in which Moat was susceptible to reason. There was no reason there. Everyone was at their wit's end, and I suppose the only inevitable outcome was Moat's suicide.
Yeah.
It wasn't suicide by cop, however, as I think a lot of people thought it was. He actually killed himself with his own gun.
Yeah.
A lot of spree killers
do that.
Suicide by cop.
You mean the police shoot them?
Yes. Yeah. Although it's fair to say that Derek Bird, who may well have placed the idea in Raoul Moat's mind, killed himself.
He shot himself.
Yes. Yeah. It wasn't suicide by cop. But there was something about this extraordinary event and events that made an awful lot of people sad. I mean, there were all kinds of investigations by the Independent Police Complaints Commission. It clearly criticising the use of the taser. It was the wrong kind of taser. It hadn't been approved, which led the former policeman to kill himself in October 2010, not long after the events. It is quite remarkable. And even now, there have been suggestions, were the media guilty of pulling the trigger? It's impossible. He was a notorious hard man, but in fact, I don't think anyone could say with any confidence that anything other than the fact that he completely lost his way. Cameron said in the House of Commons, it's absolutely clear that Raoul Moat was a callous murderer, full stop, end of story. I cannot understand any wave, however small, of public sympathy for this man. There should be sympathy for his victims and the havoc he wreaked in that community. There should be no sympathy for him. And I think that's a fitting epitaph to the story of Raoul Moat and the Northumbria manhunt.
Well, that was really interesting. Thanks, Dad.
It is a fascinating story.
Yeah, I don't remember it really clearly, so it was good to recap.
Yeah, and it does
stay in the mind, though. I said, didn't I, when you said, what should we do this week? Because literally last time I talked to the podcast about someone, they said, have you done Raoul Moat?
Yes. And I think that it is interesting to link Derek Bird and Raoul Moat. Now, I'm not confident that one incited the other, but I think that in Moat's mind, the image of Bird's shooting spree in Cumbria must have had some kind of effect.
Yeah. Well, it's a very bold thing to do, take a gun and shoot people in broad daylight or nighttime.
Well, the truth of the matter, of course, is that there's always a central figure in any spree shooting. There was in Michael Ryan in Dunblane, certainly was in Derek Bird, who was convinced that his brother was a solicitor who was somehow diddling him out of an inheritance. And in Moat's case, of course, it was Samantha Stobart.
Yeah. I mean, the spree killings like that, the guns are more common in the US, aren't they?
Much more common.
And often just based on someone being disgruntled.
Well, it's a very severe form.
Well, the school ones are.
Yes. Well, Columbine, the most famous ones. But any of the... But they take all shapes and forms.
Do you remember like a year or 2 years ago, there were just like a rash of them?
Yes. Well, that was the...
Terrible.
Yeah, they are terrifying. And we have had... I mean, Dunblane, of course, was in a school. And Hungerford, Michael Ryan, ended... He took his own life in his old school. Schools have a kind of resonance.
Very triggering for people.
Very, very significant resonance. So let's talk about something a bit more cheerful.
Finish that. Well, thank you very much. That was really interesting.
Oh, pleasure. What have we got the week coming up?
Oh, I'm taking 2 days off work.
Goodness me.
I'm working from home for 2 days.
Cool. Crikey.
Because I've been so busy, so I thought I booked this in ages ago. And someone gave me a voucher for like a spa, so I'm going to have a massage.
Wonderful. I think
that is what you need to do, Dad. That's what is the modern parlance for that. It's called self-care.
Oh, okay.
Which is what you need to do to help with your stress and skin issues.
Yes, I must take that more seriously.
No, it's really important. If you've got to do self-care, you've got to look after yourself.
Yeah.
It's an important thing.
It is. What am I doing?
Preparing for things.
Yes, this is a relatively quiet week. The next one is very busy.
Yeah.
This is comparatively quiet.
Yeah.
So I give me time to bone up on what else I've got to do and prepare for the next podcast.
I should say it again.
Any ideas you have?
Oh, yes, please write to us.
Please let us know.
Really,
and how are we contactable?
We are contactable via email, bloodties.podcast@gmail.com. We're on Twitter and on Instagram, bloodtiespod, I think. yes, you can get hold of us all those ways.
I'm
via Jeffrey's website.
Or via my website. If you look up my website, there's...
both our contact details on there.
Yeah, you find us. Any ideas, suggestions, very gratefully received. And feedback is almost always wonderful to have. Helps us.
Yeah, very important.
Very important, because we're trying to make it, even better.
Trying to be better.
And even crisper.
Always trying. Well, that's super. Thank you very much, Dad. And
Should we thank all the people who help us?
Oh, yes. Sorry, all the people that help us. Poppy Damon, our producer. Thank you, Poppy. And my brother, Dan, for doing the music. And my friend, George, who drew our caricature. And everybody who lends us support. There's an army out there, guys.
It's so nice. It's really, really wonderful to think there are so many people out there helping. And thank you too, darling.
See Bon Iver live at All Points East. Don't miss Bon Iver live Sunday, the 2nd of June at Victoria Park, London. With special guests Mac DeMarco, First Aid Kid, John Grant, Ezra Furman, and many more. Tickets available now at allpointseastfestival.com.